The lovely languid sounds of Claude Debussy's Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun, which wasn't originally on the program. Maestro Gregory Voida, I got really confused when I started to put together this interview because things have kind of changed a little bit on the program.
Well, the good news is we don't confuse you too often.
No.
Do we?
Not really.
I think for a symphony orchestra, we actually changed the program maybe a few times in a couple of years. I mean, I can't remember when this happened. Last time it happened when we had a cancellation, a soprano canceled the La Bohème performance, if you remember that, and we had to bring someone in from Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
So, sometimes soloists just drop out beyond their control, and we have to step up our game and find somebody who can actually do what's on the program, or mostly what's on the program. So this time I decided just to replace one of the concertos with this lovely piece of music that we just heard.
And I'm kind of glad because I couldn't find the Trombone Fantasy by Paul Creston in the music library. Debussy we had, but the Debussy makes sense within the context of this program.
I think so too. And the program, and it's probably another piece that you couldn't find, is the Barque sur l'Océan in French, the Barque on the Ocean.
We have it in piano version, but not orchestral.
Which is originally a piano piece by Maurice Ravel, and he himself orchestrated only two pieces out of this series called The Mirrors,
mm-hmm.
For piano. And this is one of the early examples, The Barque on the Ocean, that we're going to start a concert with, of Ravel's fantastic ways of orchestrating for a symphony orchestra. And then this lovely Debussy piece that we played a couple of years back will follow on the first half. So you actually get a chance to listen in to both of these masters of impressionistic French music.
And there is a link, sort of, between this piece, Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun, and the Daphnis and Chloe, because they are both ballets, and they are both performed by the Ballet Russe, with Sergei Diaghilev was involved, and they were both kind of, well, actually, the Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun was sort of scandalous for its time, at least the way it was danced by Nijinsky.
I mean, you know, these topics, they actually both, you know, depict times from, you know, like ancient myth and the faun, of course, you know, imaginary creature. But also Daphnis and Chloe is a story of nymphs
and
they fall in love and fall out in love and they
and
get abducted and pirates and all that. So it's all fairy tales. But, you know, where the real power and the real beauty lies is, of course, is in the music.
Mm-hmm.
So despite the fact that these pieces are performed way more often than as concert pieces rather than ballets, we need to remember that they actually do have a story, and that the musical lines, you know, succession of melodies and characters, they're all based on these actually pretty simple short stories.
Yeah. But I was wondering, there are two suites based on the ballet Daphnis and Chloe, but on the program you're not going to play them back to back.
No, because they're not, you can play them separately, and I think it's a nice frame to the program to have suite number one at the beginning and the ever-popular suite number two at the end. And this is actually my first time where I get to do these two amazing pieces with a chorus singing.
That's right, the wordless chorus, yeah.
Well, actually singing, yeah. You just said it. So they're just humming or ahhing, which back then was a great new idea of using the sound of a choir as kind of part of the orchestra and not, you know, telling you a story or reciting a text in music. But they're just like, you know, French horns and flutes and violins. They're right in the middle of the texture of this beautiful impressionistic score, and I just love that sound.
And they're compared to a Greek chorus, even though they're not explaining what's going on. They're just saying, ah.
Well, I think they're just the people, you know, the bystanders watching in on what's happening with these creatures there.
Well, let's listen to the opening of the first suite from Daphnis and Chloe. Just listening to this, you're sort of transported back in time. And Ravel himself said when he wrote this, he was looking to compose a vast musical fresco, less concerned with archaism than with faithfulness to the Greece of my dreams, which is similar to that imagined and depicted by French artists at the end of the 18th century.
Greece is an interesting, and I find it sometimes a funny topic of arts, because we make up all kinds of stuff that just wasn't true.
I
was
know.
Just reading a fascinating article about, you know, all these Greek and Roman sculptures. And you know, we started making buildings based on what we thought was right. Like, that's why, you know, have the Capitol in Washington, D.C., all white, no colors, right? Mm-hmm. But now we know that back in the days, Greeks did paint their temples.
Uh-huh.
So they were not without colors. So these sculptures and busts, they were painted like, you know, they were supposed to look like real people. And so you know, misunderstanding in art goes a long way. It actually creates worlds that we could have not imagined, like this whole world of trying to, you know, create sounds that we think Greeks could have done, you know, with the lyre and the flute. And so it is an imaginary time that both Ravel and Debussy here actually produced with you know, in just their own ways, as what they knew the best is the symphonic orchestra of the 20th century. But I mean, it's just a lovely world. It's a little bit like, what's that movie with the blue people in it?
Avatar.
Yeah, it's like the Avatar of 100 years ago, right? You just want to live there. It's such a beautiful world.
Yeah, and I said Avatar, not Smurfs. I remember it. And when I was doing the research for this, most of what I found was the scenario of the ballet, which told the story of the ballet, basically. There's shepherds in ancient Greece, and there's nymphs, and she gets abducted by pirates, and he faints and has a dream, and Pan comes to the rescue. How important is the storyline, or do you even pay attention to the storyline when you're conducting a piece like this?
Not really. I mean, I read it, but then, again, you know, both suites by the composer himself were named symphonic fragments from the ballet, so it is really not telling the whole story anyway. What matters more to me is to try to play these pieces of music kind of like imagining how dancers would dance to it. So mm-hmm. it has to be dance-like. It has to have the movement, the energy of ballet somehow in the music. So it's always about something, even though it's not necessarily a clear storyline, but it's definitely movements.
Now, the title of the concert is Ravel and Trombones, and those aren't two things that I would put together in my mind.
But they sound good in a title, no?
Yeah, they together? Do. Yes. Yes, that's the title. That's what it is. Well, it's not that common for the trombone to take the center stage in the symphony. So what made you decide to highlight the trombone?
Well, that made me decide to take two instead of yeah. one, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Pay for one, you know, go home with two trombones. This particular concerto that we are playing is actually a really nice example of how a trombonist composer can manage to write for two instruments of the same kind accompanied by a symphony orchestra and using all the possibilities of sound colors and the virtuosity of the instrument itself. So I think there are only maybe three or four trombone concertos, but you know most of them are not really well known that trombonists can play. And I'm just really glad that we get to play this particular piece, which is an Alabama premiere. And also it's a very unique piece and a very well done, beautiful piece of music for two trombones and the orchestra.
And I was able to find the first movement of it. It hasn't been recorded that I'm aware of, but I did find some audio from a video on YouTube. There we go. We're listening to the first movement of the concerto for two trombones, not one, but two trombones, by Ricardo Moya, who is a young Spanish composer and trombone player. How did you come across this work?
Actually, one of our trombone soloists for this concert, our own principal trombone, Prentice Hobbs, suggested this mm-hmm. particular piece. And I listened to it, and, you know, as you can hear, it's you know, with a lot of imagination, and it's pretty friendly and yeah. and very imaginative as far as the sound, and it's very well written for trombones, of course. And so Prentiss suggested this, and we actually have Jeremy Wilson, a wonderful young trombonist, actually stepping in. Just learned this pretty difficult piece in 2 weeks. So they are the two soloists, and based on the first rehearsal, it's just gonna be sounding great. And you know, I tend to program, I don't know if you realized in the last couple of years, concertos for unusual instruments, because I think it's not only violin, piano, and you know, cello, but there are so many great pieces that we need to discover. And last time we played the concerto for percussion.
That was fascinating. I went to the rehearsal and he broke a bowl, y'all.
He did. He was playing on balls, right?
Yes, like, he was playing rice balls. And one of them broke. And I was thinking, where is he going to go to get another one? So there's drama there.
There were some backup rice balls, luckily. And now we go with the trombones. And I think it's good to hear that pretty much every instrument on the list, they all have concertos, and they can all be, you know, playing solo parts, and it is a different sound. I mean, you know, finding music that's interesting and intriguing, and it's quality music again, and it's entertaining and it's beautiful, is one of the things I like to do. So I like to dig up, you know, strange things and take recommendations, like I did when Sean Ritenour suggested the percussion concerto.
And that was wonderful.
Or Prentiss Hobbs suggested this particular double concerto for two trombones and orchestra.
And that's something I appreciate as a concert goer as well. It's a lovely, lovely sound. I'm not going to make fun of the trombones anymore.
Well, you shouldn't. Oh. Have you before?
Well, yeah.
No, I mean, actually, one of the things why I like this piece is because it shows the range of the trombone, and not just you know, the range of pitches from low to high, but also the range of emotions that this instrument can actually produce. And as you heard, it sounds like a cello almost.
Yeah,
right?
This lovely, rich, mellow sound. And the composer, Ricardo Moya, describes his style as a jazzy neo-romantic.
Okay, good.
That's what he said.
Now I go home and think about my life again. No. I can see that. I find more connections to actually classical let's say, French music from about 80 years ago, you know, Jean Francais and some other composers, and that's or Franck, who was a Swiss composer, and those are the pieces that trombonists usually play. So no surprise that they somehow made it into this concerto too. Just like the sound and some of the ideas, like the idea of the last movement, for example, which is a very funny and a bright little scherzo at the end for two trombones. But as you can hear, it does fit into the program, so it actually goes with Ravel really well.
It does. And so there's Ravel in the first half. The first half ends. Actually, you begin. I've got it right here.
We begin with Suite Number 1, and with the Barque sur l'Océan, which is again this originally piano piece orchestrated by Ravel himself, and then we play the Afternoon of a Faun by Debussy. And by the way, there is a hidden third solo instrument of this evening, and that is the flute.
Of course,
Evelyn Lurline is going to be playing these very famous solos, the one that starts off this Debussy piece, and then again in Suite Number 2 at the end of the end of the concert. So after the Debussy, we play the first suite of Daphnis and Chloe, and after intermission, we play the double concerto for two trombones by Ricardo Moya, and we're going to end with the Suite Number 2 of Daphnis and Chloe, originally a ballet by Maurice Ravel, for wordless choir and orchestra.
Igor Stravinsky said that this was not only Ravel's best work, but also one of the most beautiful products of all French music.
Or of all music. Yeah, I do have to agree with him on that. And it's just a work of a genius. I mean, it's just an amazing score. And he created sounds like nobody has before him. If you watch it or you haven't watched it, watch it. On Netflix, you can watch The Lost City of Zed, which is a movie, it's about from 2 years ago, about an English guy who goes to South America to discover undiscovered, you know, parts of the land, and he discovers this ancient culture. And that movie uses this score as film music, as the score you just heard these birds, kind of, you know, nature is waking
the sun is coming up,
and sun is coming up.
You're there. Yeah.
So imagine the rainforest with this music. I found this choice of music for this Lost City of Zed particularly just right, and you know, it's touching that you know, filmmakers rediscover classical scores again and again.
Now that you mention it, does have a cinematic quality to it. You're there in nature, and it has nothing to do with the story of Daphnis and Chloe. It doesn't matter.
Really not. It's the sounds, and I mean, he was trying to depict something like that, right? So the bird sounds are pretty obvious, and this constant wave, you know, it's either water
or
it's the rainforest or it's the sky, but it definitely is very visual.
And it just sounds so effortless, but we know composing is not effortless. You know that. maybe it is for you.
No, it's not. Composing and playing is not effortless either. I mean, you know, it's lovely music, but it's actually very difficult. So this, the way it starts with all these fast notes in the woodwinds, kind of, you know, playing around the melody and the strings, it's actually one of the major audition repertoire for woodwinds because it's just so amazingly difficult.
And Ravel was known as being a technician. I mean, he's clumped in with the Impressionist, but he was very, very technical.
He liked to call himself a neoclassical rather than an Impressionist composer. A lot of this stuff is actually coming from the piano idioms. So he was a great piano player himself. And so this constant movement in the right hand, you know, kind of giving a shape to the chord, it's a very piano idea, I think.
Now, it sounds lovely and flowing, but he got stuck on how to bring it to a conclusion. And his student, Manuel Rosenthal, said that Ravel later confessed that, yeah, I was in a real bad mood over this, so much so that I put Rimsky's Scheherazade on the piano and tried very humbly to write something like it. So he said he was inspired by Scheherazade.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No, there's nothing.
Writer's block is part of the deal. And other composers, other artists' work can help usually. You know, you read a book, you look at a beautiful picture, go to a museum, listen to other people's music, and it might give you a solution.
Well, it seemed to work because according to this critic, it says the finale is a triumph of Dionysian rhythms featuring shifting irregular meters, a whirling celebration of pagan love. It is one of music's most exhilarating endings. Listen to a little bit of last concert featured a percussion concerto with a lot of really interesting instruments in it. This includes antique cymbals, bass drum, castanets, glockenspiel, low snare drum, tambourine, triangle, and a wind machine.
Yes, the wind is blowing in this piece a couple of times. As you could hear, it's very energetic and fast-paced. And it's in five. I don't know if you had a chance to actually count the beats as you're driving in your car, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
And the dancers complained about that.
The dancers complained about it, but no wonder Stravinsky liked this piece so much. You know, dancers complained about his Rite of Spring as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's very difficult rhythmically. So is this piece. It's hard to follow for a dancer. You know, just imagine trying to dance and listen to the music at the same time and remember the choreography and count the beats.
And your feet
this
hurt.
Is constantly changing, right? Mm-hmm. Between goes back and forth between 5 and 3 and 2. So it is somewhat disorienting for dancers, but it's just a great piece of music.
And again, this is at the conclusion of the ballet. And even if you don't know the story of Daphnis and Chloe, they get together, they break up, they get back together, and evidently they really liked each other.
Oh, that's the end of the story?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Thanks for telling
Spoiler
me.
Spoiler alert. Well, you can just tell. This is not dispassionate music.
It is very passionate. And it ends loud and fast.
Yeah.
And it's just a great ending to a concert.
And if you'd like to hear it, the whole thing live, the concert is Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Mark C. Smith Concert Hall. You can get more information at hso.org or by calling 256-539-4818. And one of my favorite things about these these concerts that are on Saturdays, I get to go to the rehearsals on Saturday mornings.
That's right.
It's such a gift for me because I can't stay awake past 8 o'clock. My work schedule is such that it's difficult. But it was so much fun to be at the last rehearsal and watch the little kids' reaction to the percussion concerto because they're just so in the moment and feeling the music. And I think that's probably what the composer would have wanted.
I like to think of our sneak preview open dress rehearsals as kind of another series of casual classics because it's casual because, you know, you don't have to dress up and you can bring your
cane.
And
I can go to the barn afterwards. you
can leave whenever you want, you know. Nobody's going to say anything. At the same time, you actually do get to take a peek at what we're doing as a performing arts group, meaning how do we get there to the performance, just this, all this practicing and all the behind-the-scenes things that are going on, which without we could not do a performance. So sometimes going to these open rehearsals are actually more fun than going to the concert because you get to see the details and you get to actually learn how conductors and orchestras work.
And it's fascinating. And there's no assigned seating. You can sit at one place and then get up and move and change your seat without irritating people and people like to bring their kids. And there is an event for young children at 10:15, the Music Explorers Club, where they can go and get hands-on stuff and play. And I think it's just a great way to pass on this love of music.
And it's going to be Sean Ritenour doing
it. Oh, he's the best.
This week. Yeah. So it's all about percussion.
You get to hit things that aren't your
exactly.
brother or sister.
So it's very exciting for kids and for adults, I would say.
Yes. And again, more information is at hso.org. But of course, this isn't the end of the season.
There is more. We have free family concert coming up we have Lift Off. We named this Pops Concert. So guess what? It's all about space. Space and rockets. It's at the end of the month. And the next classical is going to be about a month from now. And that is the Four Seasons.
Oh, Timothy wonderful.
Chui is coming to play the entire set. So it's not just, you know, one out of the Four Seasons. It's the complete series, set of violin concertos. All four seasons. So it lasts about 45
minutes.
Yeah. And then in the second half is Aus Italien from Italy, an early symphonic poem by Richard Strauss. So there's this, again, another guy who was just amazing with his imagination and his technique in writing for symphony orchestra. And he wrote this four-movement symphonic poem about his experiences in Italy. And I think it's a little bit related to the program we're doing this week. Like, you know, it's all the southern sunshine and the sea and sailing and all that. So there is, if Richard Strauss ever wanted to be Italian or French, I think this is the piece where you can kind of hear that.
Again, you can find more information about the free family concert with Peter and the Wolf. Good old Peter and the Wolf back for another performance.
That's right.
And you can find it all at hso.org. Gregory Voigt, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Speaking of pleasure, we're going to listen to the last part of Daphnis and Chloe.